Attention, attention all personnel. It's MASHcast.
Hello, and welcome to MASHcast, the show that analyzes and celebrates, episode by episode, the greatest TV series of all time, MASH, which ran on CBS from 1972 to 1983. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Corporal Captain Rob Kelly, and joining us back again in the VIP tent is Brigadier General Zaki Hassan. Hi, Zaki. Welcome back.
Hey, thanks. Have I been promoted since last time? I can't remember what my rank was.
You've risen up through the ranks. Mattis is gone now, so now there's room for you to be Brigadier General. So, this is the final show of Season 1, Showtime, which aired on March 25th, 1973. It was written by Larry Gelbart and directed by Jackie Perry-White Cooper. Now, Zaki, you've been on the show before, so we already know sort of your secret origin with the MASH TV series. We're going to get right to the plot of this one, such as it is. A USO band is visiting the 477th, and the show goes on as various elements transpire. Hawkeye and Frank engage in a war of ever-escalating practical jokes. This has to be the most playful Frank has ever been. Henry is desperately trying to get a phone call home since his wife is giving birth, and Trapper, Hot Lips, and Ugly John are deeply involved in a difficult case. In addition, the unit's dentist, Captain Kaplan, played by Harvey Goldenberg, has his orders to be shipped home, but is so paranoid something will happen to him that holds up his leaving that he refuses to do anything, kiss a nurse, touch a piece of paper, in fear of getting a paper cut, or even go to the latrine. In between, Radar joins the USO band on drums. He gets word to Henry that his wife has given birth to a son. Trapper's patient pulls through after hours of surgery. Hawkeye wins the prank war by collapsing the walls of the latrine while Frank is in it. And even though he makes it out of the camp, a Jeep accident causes Captain Kaplan to break some bones, leaving him stuck in the 477th for a little while longer. All right, so Zaki, why did you want to talk about this one?
Well, I just thought it's a good capper for the season. You know, I think it neatly wraps up the year in a way that evokes what the show had become while also hearkening back to kind of the madcap tone of the film. So it's really, we see as the series progressed, but specifically in the first season, this, the dance between Altman and Alda, so to speak, you know?
Right.
And I like how this one, it really is both. It has a foot in both camps.
It is kind of Altman-esque in that I feel like I figure as they were writing this, they didn't have enough plot to fill an episode by itself. So they have these are all sort of random ideas, and then it's threaded through with the USO troop coming by. Because the Hawkeye prank war, you're not going to get a whole 22 minutes out of that. You know, right. But you can do it here and there. And then the thing with Henry and the stuff with Trapper. So this feels like maybe as they were writing the season, they had these sort of idea strands of like, well, we could do this, we could do this, and we could do this. Oh, well, all right, what do we get? Let's total all of it up. Well, that's like 17 pages. So what do we do? Okay, let's bring in a USO troop, which, of course, MASH would get in season 10, a USO troop would come by, and they got two whole episodes out of that that premise. But here, they're just kind of dangling in and out of the band playing the song, the old-timey songs and stuff like that. But in terms of the individual stories, I mean, this is, like I said in the synopsis, this is like the most playful Frank has ever been. I can't believe he would even engage in this at all.
Yeah, it's nice. It's nice to see Frank not be, you know, the guy wandering around with a stick up his hindquarters. It's it's a little bit refreshing. It's almost like, you know, everyone needs to have an occasional day where they're not just unbearable.
Right, right. I did do some research on this episode, and it mentions that the whole bit about there's one prank where Hawkeye goes into the shower and he pulls the chain, and the water comes out of the other spigot. Uh-huh. And then he just looks kind of baffled. So he moves over to the other thing, pulls the chain again, and then the water comes out of the other spigot. So it's this constant. And I read something, I guess somebody who knows about plumbing, and they said that is impossible to happen because all the water comes from one source. They said Frank would have to completely rejigger the entire 477th plumbing for that to happen. So I love that idea that it's like, well, this is not a thing that could ever really be maintained, but it's a funny gag anyway.
That's funny.
And as I mentioned two episodes ago for the Major Fritzy Dobbs, which has got the first appearance of Captain Kaplan, the dentist, this is, other than one appearance in season two, we really never see the dentist again. That's like a holdover from the MASH movie where they had a dentist. But MASH, in the final, like, you know, 10 seasons of the show, just sort of lived without having a dentist. Or if they did, we never saw him.
They never
referred to it ever again.
It's interesting how through the course of the first season, how the cast of recurring medical personnel just shrunk and shrunk in the camp.
Right. I mean, they had so many people at the beginning, and then now it really got honed down to just the four doctors.
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously it goes to, you know, you as any show goes on, you get a sense of what's working and what's not working. And, you know, many series, you see the opposite thing happen where you see more and more recurring actors become regulars. And in MASH, that didn't really happen. I mean, we saw it with, you know, Klinger and William Christopher. I think they're the only recurring people who became regulars, right? Am I misremembering?
Yeah. Yep. No, that's right.
Yes. I mean, in other words, they realized they really had a strong ensemble in the tent, so to speak. And it's like they were able to farm out enough storylines within them that it just worked out that way. You don't see that happen often with the sitcoms.
Yeah, I mean, I think once Alan Alda sort of really got comfortable being the creative force that he was, I think he was such a fountain of ideas.
Yeah.
And then again, in later seasons, you would see a lot of the cast would direct episodes and write episodes. So they got more comfortable. But yeah, this is a show that quickly sort of contracted a little. Because, of course, it never made any sense to me that you could run a whole medical unit with only four doctors.
Right.
I mean, I don't know. Especially when, you know, Hawkeye Trapper would go to Tokyo for the weekend. Like, how does that happen? How do you run a hospital with two doctors? But, you know, we just have to kind of go by that. In terms of the other actors in this episode, Joey Foreman is the guy who's the sort of the ringleader, the band leader, and the comedian on from the USO troupe. He played a character called Harry Hu on Get Smart. And if you go to his IMDb page, it is him as Harry Hu as his IMDb avatar. And it's him in Asian eye makeup.
Hey.
So that's a little problematic. Yeah. He had appearances on Love American Style, The Doris Day Show, Holmes and Yo-Yo, that famous show. And he appeared in The Nude Bomb, the Get Smart movie from 1982.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Yeah. Harvey Goldenberg is Captain Kaplan. Never really had too many other appearances. I did cover them in the Major Fritzy Dobbs episode. There were some actors playing patients. There's Stanley Clay, who did two episodes of Cheers. He was on Police Story, CPO Sharky, Room 222. He's the director of a documentary called You Are Not Alone about being gay in Hollywood, which has only come out a couple of years ago. So he had kind of an interesting career arc. And then another patient we see briefly is Donnie Most, Ralph Malph himself. So making that is the second Happy Days actor to appear in this season, because, of course, Ron Howard was in Sometimes You Hear the Bullet.
Do we get any other Happy Days alums during the course of the series? I'm trying to think.
I can't think of any. I mean, I know Anson Williams and certainly Tom Bosley and Henry Winkler never appeared. So I think that's probably it. I have to wonder if the guy that played Chuck appeared somewhere.
That's why we never heard from him again. He was in Korea the whole time.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, think about it. These shows overlap in their time periods, I think. I mean, Happy Days.
It's the 1950s shared sitcom universe.
Right? Shared cinematic universe. Yeah, there is a weird thing I found in the IMDb trivia, and this is bewildering to me, is that it said when this episode originally aired in 1973, this is the only time that the closing credits were not stills from the episode, but a continuation of the episode.
Hmm.
I've never seen that, because the version on I've ever seen on syndication or on DVD just has the end credits as normal. So I'm bewildered at that, and I would love to see it if somebody ever uploaded on YouTube, but it probably is the kind of thing that aired once or twice, and then they just reformatted it to fit the rest of the episodes. But I'm flummoxed at why they would do that, why they would change the format for the final show of the season. It's very strange.
Well, it's like the movie, right, where you've got the – well, see, I don't know – I'm drawing a blank now, because we see the cast names as they're watching the USO show, but are there credits after that?
Yeah, there's the normal credits. There's just the regular standard credits.
Okay.
Over the music. So yeah, it's very strange.
So when it originally aired, I'm wondering if the trivia is like wrong. That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that. Maybe the person that wrote the IMDb trivia can be a little dodgy.
You know, there are like maybe that it was referring to as the cast is watching the USO guy. That's what I was thinking.
Oh, that could, you know what? I didn't even think about that, but that could be. You're right, because we do see it is kind of a, you know, an indication that this is the final show of the season, and then we want to remind everybody, you know, who everybody is. And of course, this was the last episode of MASH that aired while the show was still struggling.
Right.
Because as of it gained in popularity in reruns over the summer season, and then the first episode of season two, it was run after All in the Family. Huh. And it retained all of that audience, and then the show became a behemoth after that and stayed such, and in fact grew in popularity over the course of its years, which is very unusual. But so this was really the last episode of the show as like the underdog that it was still struggling to survive.
Was there any question about it coming back when this aired, or had it already been renewed? Do you know that?
That I do not know. I know that the idea was they thought – I read this, forget where what book I read this in, but they talked about that they put it on, they figured that let's run it over the summer and give it a chance to build noise, because at this point the critics were liking it more and more.
Uh-huh.
And they realized that they had a good show.
Yeah.
I mean, so it was sort of like, well, this is really good. Let's do something with this and let's see if we can and see if we can maybe give it a better shot. And of course, putting a show after All in the Family, which is already a groundbreaking mega hit, that's handing it the biggest favor you could have handed it. I mean, and it's amazing to think of on Saturday night. First of all, this was on Saturday night, which is now considered a TV dead zone.
Yeah.
You don't put anything hit on Saturday night. But CBS Saturday nights were All in the Family, The Mary Tyler Moore Show, MASH, and The Bob Newhart Show. I mean, that is a gangbuster lineup.
What a lineup, yeah.
Yeah. Just because my memory is bouncing around, there was an episode of The Newhart Show, the later show, the one in the 80s where he ran The Inn, where there was the character. Did you ever watch that show, Zaki?
The Newhart? Yeah, I actually watched Newhart more than The Bob Newhart Show.
Okay. There was the character, the Peter Scolari character on that show, who was this kind of vain – he wasn't that bad, but he was more of like a selfish kind of guy. And it was the funniest thing. I haven't seen this episode in 30 years, but I still remember the line. There's one about where the Peter Scolari character is getting into television or something, or wants to produce a local show, and the show he produces is like the lowest common denominator trash television. And Bob is kind of like chiding him a little for like, well, why don't you try and make something better? And the Peter Scolari character says, you know what? You're right. Maybe television can be better. We all remember the classic CBS lineup on Saturday nights. And he's the Mary Tyler Moore Show and MASH and All in the Family. And that show about the psychiatrist that stuttered. And Bob Newhart just pauses and goes, stammered. It's like, and I just remember just hearing a character on another TV show mention MASH. I was like a dog, you know. I was like, oh, squirrel, you know. I was so excited to hear that.
That's a really funny joke, though.
Yeah, I think it's a great gag. This episode was written by Robert Klein, who did Requiem for a Lightweight, which of course you were on. You talked about that one,
yeah.
And five other episodes. This is the final appearance of John Orchard as Ugly John, the anesthetist. After that, they would not have a regular anesthetist character at this point. They would just handle it. The nurses and the doctors would handle it. And as I mentioned, it was directed by Jackie Cooper, who of course played Perry White in the Superman movies. He did 13 episodes of MASH. The one other detail I think that's sort of interesting to note in this one is Henry's son is born. We find out that he has a son. So that of course means that the 477th has been in existence less than 9 months. That's really the first time they've ever sort of established just how long they've all been here to this point.
Yeah.
And of course, what we know about what will happen to Henry Blake, it's kind of extra sad to know that this son was never going to meet his father.
I was thinking about that as I was rewatching it. I was like, oh,
yeah.
The ending of the episode is sad anyway without that context.
Yeah.
But it's extra sad knowing that, exactly.
Yeah. The actresses playing the sister, the three singing sisters, I looked them up on IMDb, and they really don't have any other credits outside of this. So I get the sense, since they're not given any lines, other than they just sing. They, I think, are probably real singers. They were just hired for this episode, but they're not actually actors. They were just sort of dropped in as to play the, you know, they were basically like the Andrews sisters kind of thing. Do you have a particular like favorite scene or favorite bit from this episode?
Well, we were mentioning it. I mean, the thing at the end when Radar brings the little baby for Henry to hold was just, you know, it's evocative of just what Radar is best at, which is just knowing what everyone else is thinking before they even know what they need. Mm. And I love the little bit where Henry's like, looking at the mother, he's like, does she speak English? And he says, no, but it's a good thing you can smile in Korean. Mm-hmm. I just love
that. It's very sweet. Yeah, it's very sweet. Yeah, and Radar would do that a bunch of times. He did that in a later episode where he gets a phone call. He arranges a phone call for Frank from Frank's mom. And he figures it out before Frank even figures it out. But yeah, Radar was, of course, that's his radar abilities didn't just work with the choppers. It actually talked about emotionally he could figure out what people needed. So yeah, it is a very, very sweet moment. There's a great scene in the mess tent with Hawkeye and Father Mulcahy, which is kind of a big moment for William Christopher, considering how early on in the show this was, and he was still not even considered a regular, even though he's mentioned, as you said, in the end credits at the end. But where Father Mulcahy talks about that he has doubts about his usefulness to the unit, at least compared to what the doctors do. And Hawkeye has this line where he says, a professor, and this is my favorite passage in this episode, where he says, a professor that he once had said, God cures the patients, but the doctor takes the fee. And Mulcahy says, do you think that's true? And then Hawkeye replies, I'm able to do a lot of things in surgery that I'm not really good enough to do. I think that's an amazing line. And they establish later on that Hawkeye is not a man of faith in any way.
Yeah.
That's a pretty, I don't know, that's a, like a really self-actualized line for him to say. I think that's a really great moment.
I was actually thinking about that as I was watching, because I had that exact thought. I was like, we have a pretty good sense that Hawkeye isn't necessarily a believer, you know, but I think it says something about his character where he knows what Father Mulcahy needs to hear, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And not to say he's making that up. I don't mean that, but I mean, he has that awareness of, I think he has an awareness of the power of belief in people. And that's just as powerful as the thing that you believe in, if that makes sense.
Yeah. 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 It's he's very gentle with Father Mulcahy, which I like. Like that they have that good relationship. And this is something that would go on with Father Mulcahy throughout the seasons, that he was always sort of doubting his usefulness to the unit. I feel like maybe in later episodes they kind of overplayed that a little, because there are some later episodes where Mulcahy is very vital to the unit, and I would think he wouldn't have these doubts anymore. But early on, I would imagine that if you're there, you're at a medical unit and you are not a medical professional, I could see you might feel a little useless.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, everybody's doing this important stuff and I'm just kind of, you know, at the margins, especially since they had a recurring joke that very few people went to his services.
Right.
Every time they would show his services, it was like three people would attend. So, but yeah, I think that's a really nice moment. And that line that Hawkeye has, that God cures the patients, but the doctor takes the fee.
Right.
I was like, is that a thing? Is that a thing in the culture? And they just used it. So I looked it up and I could not find a single reference to that phrase as anything other than coming from MASH.
There you go.
I have not met it at all. So I am betting that it is a creation of Larry Gelbart.
It sounds very Gelbart-y, doesn't it?
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I mean, I'm still doubting Larry Gelbart to this point because – and this is – I can mention this when we get to it years from now, but it's related, is that in the episode The Interview, the classic, The Interview.
Right.
And Hawkeye has the line about where they ask him –
about the dictionary one, right?
About the dictionary. And yeah. He says, you know, what books did you bring to read? And he says, oh, I bring the dictionary. I figure it's got all the other books in it. And I my mind was blown at that line. I was like, that had to be in the culture. There's no way they just made that up. That's too brilliant. And I mentioned that on my MASH blog. And Larry Gelbart himself commented on my MASH blog, which was like one of my greatest thrills in life. And he said, no, Alan Alda made that line up.
Wow.
And I was like, wow. So I shouldn't be doubting, even at this point, I shouldn't be doubting MASH's brilliance to add things to the culture. So we're going to give Larry Gelbart credit for God cures the patients, but the doctor takes the fee, because it's an amazing line.
So it is.
It's really, really fantastic. So yeah, I kind of find this to be a weird episode to go out on, considering that the previous one was Ceasefire, which feels like a season ender kind of thing. This feels like a weird kind of epilogue, but nevertheless, it's a fun episode. It's nice to see Hawkeye and Frank have that, you know, tete-a-tete back and forth. And, you know, they went out on kind of a nice warm episode. And again, they were sort of hoping, hey, everybody, please keep watching, you know, but let's hope this is one of these shows that just has 24 nice episodes and it disappears. But yeah, it's overall a pretty good episode. I like Showtime.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is there anything else you want to say about it before we wrap up?
No, I think we covered it.
All right. Very cool. So Zachy, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh my gosh, I am everywhere. You can go to my website, zackyscorner.com. That's Z-A-K-I-S corner. That's also my Twitter. That's also my Instagram. You can check out my podcasts. I host the Movie Film Podcast with my partner, Brian Hall. That's usually every 2 weeks, give or take, where we talk about new releases and just the latest news and headlines. We also do usually a commentary track about once a month, sometimes twice a month. We have, in time for Christmas, we have our commentary track for Home Alone dropping. That'll be going up.
Oh my God.
So wow. if you know us, you know that's a favorite for both of us. So that was a really fun one to record. The Nostalgia Theater Show, which I drop usually about once a month. Latest episode of that is my conversation with Dan Gilvezan, who is the voice of Bumblebee in the original Transformers show. He was also Spider-Man on Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And that was a thrilling and lovely conversation I was privileged to be a part of. And I think that covers it.
That's very cool. Well, the Nostalgia Theater actually leads perfectly into the one of the couple things I want to mention is a couple of days ago, we released an episode called it's called Find Your Joy. And that's the theme of our network is finding your joy, is finding the things that you like and you want to talk about. Because, of course, as you know, Zachy, there's a lot of negativity out there.
Very much so.
Very much so. And so it's we make it an effort on the Fire and Water Network to kind of lean into the things we like. And so we did a big episode where everybody contributed to talk about the things they found their joy in. And the things that I mentioned that I found my joy in 2018 was the chances I had to speak to some people whose work meant a lot to me. And I got to meet Karen Allen this year. I got to interview Richard Donner this year. And the other thing I mentioned, and this has to do with you, is that I got to, by proxy, talk to Mike Farrell.
No.
Because, of course, you did your Mike Farrell interview on Nostalgia Theater, and you mentioned me to him on the show. And even though I didn't get to talk to Mike directly, that was still one of the greatest thrills of my life, the fact that BJ Honeycutt himself, like, knows who I am. And you mentioned something that I said about MASH to him, and he said something to the effect of, that's exactly right. I'm like, I got to hear Mike Farrell say I was exactly right about something. So I have thanked you on other episodes of MASHcast, but I haven't had a chance to thank you directly on air. So I'm doing that now. Thank you for providing me one of the thrills of 2018, because that really meant a lot to me that a guy whose work I admire so much knows who I am. That was just a big thrill. So thank you.
Well, you know, I think one thing I always say about the podcasting community is it has brought me so much joy. And part of that joy is being able to consider you and so many other people like you as genuine friends. And, you know, we would not know each other if it were not for this community that we've sort of created. And that's why, you know, we talk about the negativity in the internet. Yeah, there is a lot of it out there, but, you know, there's so much good that it is capable of. And I include our friendship as one of those things.
Thank you. Yeah, it was terrific. It's just great. Yeah, I love that when you and Brian were on for the MASH episode, that was terrific. And like I said, we talked about that. It was only because of Brian's errant comment on your show about watching MASH that, like, this whole thing, you know, turned into what it is. So,
it's amazing.
Yeah. It is amazing. So again, thank you so much, because it was just terrific to be able to hear Mike Farrell mention me in some context.
That's awesome. It
completely destroys my 11-year-old brain. You know, that's even a thing. So, and two other things I want to mention. Of course, we are going to do a mail call episode that is going to drop 2 weeks from now, which would be Wednesday, January 16th. So I'm going to go through all the feedback I've gotten for the previous 24 episodes, plus the promo, plus the one Movie Tonight special episode that we did. So all the comments, I'm going to go through all those, because I haven't done mail call to this point, so I'm going to cover it all then. And I also want to mention, I got a very nice email from a young man. I don't want to necessarily say anything about it, because I don't know if it was for public airing, but he was very nice about that he's a fan of MASH and he likes the show. And he suggested suggested that I open the floor to questions. So I'm going to do that. So if anybody listening to this has a question about me and the show, or me and the MASH TV series or the podcast, anything related to MASH and this show, and you want to have that answered on the air, I can't promise I will answer them all if I get them all, but please go ahead and ask. You can go to the website, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com, and go to the contact link and just type in your question. And I promise I will try and get to it on the feedback episode. So it's basically kind of an AMA, American Medical Association, and Ask Me Anything kind of thing. So go ahead and ask your questions. I would love to find out what people want to know. And then the final thing is the announcement of MASHcast Season 2. We're, of course, going to do Season 2. I don't have a firm date as when that's going to launch yet. But if you are listening to this and you want to join me on an episode or two of MASHcast for Season 2, go to IMDb, queue up Season 2 of MASH, check out the episodes, and using the same contact page form that I mentioned, fireandwaterpodcast.com, contact us. Let me know what episode you want to talk about. If you could provide it like an alternate or two, that would be great. That way everybody has a chance to maybe get one of their favorites selected. So use that, and then I will get back to you and let you know which one I'm picking you for, and then we can go from there. So I've been very, very lucky that so many people have been interested on the show, and it's been great having everybody on, Zachy and you and everybody else. It's just been terrific talking to different people about MASH and hearing about their experiences with the show. So if you want to be part of Season 2, use the contact page on fireandwaterpodcast.com. So thanks, everybody. Of course, if you want to listen to back episodes of the show, again, go back to the website. You can leave a comment there. And we're also talking about MASH over on Twitter at MASH477Cast. So again, thanks everybody for listening. This has been a great, great experience doing the first whole season of MASH. And until next, until the mail call episode, that is all.
Beginning. Jinx! Look at that.
Anybody can step on the gas instead of the brake.
How's the driver?
The kid's okay.
Figures! I'm going home. I'm in pieces. He's staying here. He didn't bust a pimple. You know how I'm getting home when the time comes? I'm walking.
Look.